Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado. No wonder Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Thursday afternoon, kind of a cloudy afternoon in downtown Chicago. Bill Geiger will be along a little bit later. We will also look at the Edelman Trust Index. It's a worldwide index and was released in Davos, Switzerland at the World Economic Forum last week. That's coming up later in the program. But first, what do you know about the Khan Academy? Not much, maybe. Sounds familiar? Well, ask your kids. I asked mine last night what they knew of the Khan Academy, and they said Sal Khan helped get them through high school. He's in the studio now. Sal, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Great to be here.
You are here with the Hyatt Hotel CEO, Mark Hoplamazian. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Steve.
And here to announce a great new initiative that kind of a national, almost worldwide start that's getting one of its early boosts here in Chicago. I want to talk about that, but first, give us just a little bit of a primer on the Khan Academy, because it's a remarkable story.
Well, we're a not-for-profit with the mission of providing a free world-class education for anyone, anywhere. It started somewhat happenstance with me tutoring cousins, then word got around the family that free tutoring was going on, so it became more cousins.
You're putting videos up on YouTube.
Well, to help scale, that's when I started doing the videos, and then people who aren't my cousins started watching. And today, Khan Academy is much more than just videos. We still have a lot of videos in math, science, humanities, but we have an exercise platform where students can work at their own pace, get practice, get as much feedback. We have tools for teachers. Last month, on the order of about 20 million students were using Khan Academy.
Last month, 20 million. I think I saw something like 100 million for the year 2014.
That's right. We around 1 in 5 to 1 in 4 American students use Khan Academy at least once a year.
You are a revolutionary.
We hope.
Mark, is he a revolutionary?
Absolutely. Yeah, he's a visionary for sure.
And so then we come along with the new program, LearnStorm, which is getting its kickoff in Chicago today. And then what you said, 5 regions around the country and in Ireland as well.
That's right. You know, Khan Academy, we've been this virtual thing, but we've always recognized that it's most potent when it's done in conjunction with schools and teachers and communities. And so LearnStorm is all about students working on Khan Academy and not just learning the math, but building their mindset, building grit, perseverance.
So when you say working on Khan Academy, so they're looking online at videos and then getting exercises from that.
Yeah, and it's actually, they can watch the videos as they like, but it's more about the exercises. They start it wherever they are. It's all aligned to their standards, the things that they're seeing in school, but they can work at their own time and pace, fill in their gaps, and then progress it. And then we can see not just whether they've mastered exponents, but we can also see, well, when they get a question wrong, do they keep going? Do they show that grit, that perseverance? And we reward that through LearnStorm.
So my kids' experience is when they were having trouble in their math class, or maybe not even having trouble, but wanting to understand better, they would go to Khan Academy, find a little 5-minute video. You still do all? You don't do all the videos anymore.
I don't do all of them. I still do. Yesterday, from a Hyatt hotel room, I did some special relativity videos. So.
Oh, right.
Some relativity. I'll have to check those out. So they would watch you or listen to you as you were working on a board, explain math problems that helped get them through their math classes. So that's one way. But then there are other ways where Khan Academy is incorporated into the curriculum of schools around the country.
Yeah, we have essentially a limitless number of exercise items that we've done with the creators of actually the Common Core standards. We have over 1 million teachers who are using Khan Academy in their classroom. And so that's what LearnStorm is focused on, students learning at their own pace through these exercises and getting feedback.
All right, so let's get back to LearnStorm then, because you were with the mayor today. Mark was there, Sal was there, and the mayor and others. So is this school system-wide in Chicago, or is it voluntary, or how's it working in the city?
Well, we're excited about Chicago Public Schools. They're in on it, but it's also all of Chicagoland, so the surrounding areas. And we're going to really celebrate it and get as many people to participate, but it's not going to be forced on the teachers. The teachers will opt in.
It sounds like a condensed sort of a sprint to better math skills. Is it a sprint?
It's going to be a kind of a 3-month celebration sprint, and it's not just about better math skills. It's math as a means to build your mindset.
Well, tell me about that. So it's not just about 2 + 2 = 4, but it prepares you to solve life's problems down the road.
Yeah, we're going to have leaderboards on what we call Hustle, and it's not just going to be at the individual level, it's going to be at the school level and the city level, where we can see a student as they work through their math, when they get a question wrong, if they keep going, that's going to make their Hustle points higher. And so we can celebrate which schools, which districts are really showing that. And that ability to persevere and have grit, that's frankly even more important than factoring the polynomial or learning the exponents.
So that's where the growth is, just taking the challenge and keeping at it, keeping going. Mark, you're setting up labs at Hyatt Hotels, right?
Yeah. So when we first engaged in this with Sal about 9 months ago, our idea was to build off of what he just described, perseverance, and make sure that we were promoting a growth mindset within Hyatt. So the very first thing that we're doing is launching LearnStorm internally at Hyatt. That is, we're going to run our own LearnStorm challenge within Hyatt. We have over 100,000 colleagues in 50 countries around the world. So this will be a global challenge. And it allows people to practice being in a growth mindset, which we think is essential for being successful.
Okay, Sal, no offense, but if I'm working as a professional or working in a hotel or restaurant or wherever, I'm not that enthused about taking on math challenges.
Well, I have to tell you, it's actually really fun. You get energy back from engaging in these things. First and foremost, the videos and the courseware that's online is really real. It's got an authenticity and an empathy-based approach. And Sal does do a lot of the videos himself, and you can tell he's a very engaging personality.
Yes, yeah.
So I think it'll give people a lot of energy, and the fact that you get rewarded for failure, for actually pushing yourself past your comfort zone and going to that next step is such an important training.
So in your labs at Hyatt, you're concerned more about perseverance than mathematics skills.
Yeah, I think math is a vehicle to opening up people's mindsets and letting them practice that mindset. And then you can apply that to anything. So I would say, yes, this is you described it as a sprint, a very focused challenge, but it's really the launching point. Going forward, if we get this right, and I think we will, I know we will, because we already have evidence from a pilot that Sal did last year, it'll propel kids to engage that much more.
How do you, after 9 weeks, gauge success?
Well, we can directly measure the participation. You know, in our pilot last year, we had 10% of all students in the Bay Area participate, and it was very broad. Over 40% were from majority free and reduced lunch schools. So we're going to see the direct time that the students spend learning and how they participate. And we also hope to subjectively feel the energy from the community, where we get the mayor involved, we get business involved, we get community leaders, the public school system involved, teachers, parents.
Well, one of the things I like about the Khan Academy, now that I've become an expert, is, you know, there's a quote from you that you want to level the playing field when it comes to kids and education. I don't know how familiar you are with Illinois, but this is not a level playing field at all. I live in a relatively affluent suburb. My kids went to a beautiful high school. One's still a senior, and they've benefited greatly. The teachers are remarkable, but it's property tax-based driven in many ways, so there are other areas that don't do nearly as well. This is the sort of thing that could really help with that, right?
Yeah, I mean, we hear over and over again, and that's the exact goal. That's why we're a not-for-profit. Is you know, we're the tutor that a lot of students can't afford, but it's not a less than tutor. It's hopefully as good as anybody, as you know, your children and
sure.
others use it. You know, we did a partnership recently with the College Board, where now there's going to be free SAT prep, and it's going to be the best SAT prep that happens to be free. So everything we do is, how can we level the playing field? How do we get more students to tap into their potential and realize what they can do?
I talked to a mom who said, you know, I told my kid's teacher that, look out, you're going to be replaced, which isn't your goal at all. Tell me about the integration of the web-based education and the person in the classroom.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, as a parent myself, if I had to pick between great technology and no teacher versus great teacher and no technology, I'd pick the great teacher, no technology any day. In our mind, it's all about, how do you use technology to empower the teacher and humanize the classroom? So if lectures can happen at students' own time and pace, if they can work through exercises, then the teacher has more information. When the students come to class, the teacher can do more focused interventions, do more simulations, have more dialogue. And I think that's what most teachers want to do. They want to form more of those connections and be able to meet the students exactly where they are.
So if people want to find out more information, how do they find it out?
KhanAcademy.org. And what I tell every parent is, they also should work on it. That's the best way to get their children
children engaged.
And if people stop by at Hyatt to spend the night, they can stop into the kitchen and take a challenge as well.
Take a challenge. And if you're tracking this on social media, it's hashtag LS Chicago, Learn Storm Chicago.
Excellent.
LS Chicago.
Mark Hoplamazian is the CEO of Hyatt and Sal Khan of Khan Academy. The best thing truly is now at night, instead of playing solitaire on my phone, I can watch videos about Renaissance art.
So perfect.
I owe you. Nice to meet both of you. Thanks very much for coming in, and good luck. Good luck to all of you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. <laughs> 11:23 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand hosting, as I do most days, if I'm able to hold on to this job. Bill Geiger's in the studio. Bill, welcome.
Good afternoon.
I was just going to say, I hope people will follow me on Twitter, at Steve Bertrand, and we'll have more information about the Khan Academy and Geiger Wealth Management as well. Bill comes in from time to time, talks about how to prepare for retirement, and I know that one of the ways to do that is to read your newsletter, right? So how do people get the newsletter?
If they go to growmyretirement.com, they can sign up and we'll send it to them automatically.
All right, so it's been nothing but roses on Wall Street so far this year.
This is actually the worst January in the history of the market.
This is what you've been talking about since I met you. I was reading a story in, I think it was Yahoo Finance, though, about retirement and about how people are retiring later and later. For example, more than 20% of boomers 65 and older now will be still working in the year 2024, and that compares with, I think, about 10% in 1994. So I'm not sure what that tells me. I mean, it tells me we are working longer because we can't afford to retire, but it also seems like that means do we need to be more aggressive longer?
Well, here's the big issue. Our parents, a lot of them had pensions. And they retired with a pension and Social Security, and they were just fine. Whatever else they saved, they had in CDs, and they were comfortable. And they didn't have a really long life expectancy. Pensions are kind of gone now, and we have to be responsible for saving and investing to replace those pensions. And in a lot of cases, folks haven't saved enough, Steve. And in other cases, they were on a track, but they lost so much in 08 that they're behind where they really wanted to be.
I think that, you know, people talk about the Social Security and going bankrupt and all of that. I think the real crisis we're going to face is when the people who don't have fixed pensions and who are relying on 401ks, you know, people maybe of my generation and a little bit younger, start to retire and realize they don't have anything.
Yeah, and that's why so many more. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics is the people that came up with that number of years that 20% working past 65, and even people working in their 70s, I think that's low. I think that's underestimating the issue. I think folks are going to be working for a long time.
So there are a couple of ways to look at it then, because in my case, if I'm working when I'm 75, I want to have saved what I need to and be working maybe for health insurance or for spending money or things like that.
Or because you want to.
Because I want to.
Not because you have to.
Right. So what do you do to get there?
Well, a few things. First of all, especially, you know, I always talk about people in their late 50s, early 60s, because this is where crunch time is. This is where bad things can stick with you. So if you're in your late 50s, early 60s, you want to make sure you hang on to what you have. And that means no big losses, no more 08s and no more 01s and 02s. The other thing is, no matter how comfortable you think you are, save more. Save more. Save everything that you can.
So no matter if you think the nest egg is big enough, add another egg.
Add another egg. And by the way, most people, the nest egg is never big enough. Okay.
Right.
And the final thing is to, you know, once you make sure you don't have any big losses and your savings more, focus on conservative growth. And what I mean by that, when you're in your 30s, it's swing for the fences, growth, growth, growth. When you're in your late 50s, early 60s, it should be more like, let's protect first and then growth, growth, growth. It's a little bit different focus.
So, well, that's what I was going to ask, because if we are going to be working longer and living longer, we're going to be needing that money longer. So
exactly.
Maybe that would tell me that we might need to push growth back a little bit later in our life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, we focus a lot on growth as a as a society. And the funny thing is when you retire, when you actually retired and there's no more paychecks coming in, the whole focus changes to income.
Right.
It's like, how am I going to pay my bills? So there's a transition process as you start getting closer to retirement. You sure want to focus on growth, but you want to start building up some income, and you need to put in place some strategies to do that. So when you do retire and the paychecks stop, you can pay your bills every month.
Well, the Dow is up today so far.
Amen.
Not too much, but it's up a little bit. So hopefully we'll keep a streak going or get a streak going. And when we talk next week, things will be a little different. We'll be in positive territory for the year.
Yes, we will.
That's going to take a big rally. Bill Geiger, nice to talk to you.
Nice, sir.
That's Bill Geiger. You can learn more at Geiger Wealth Management or growmyretirement.com. You know, Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth Management is offering a great opportunity for listeners today. He'll sit down with you personally to create a full-blown financial plan to help you prepare for your retirement. That's a $3,000 value. Bill and Geiger Wealth Management are offering this plan complimentary, no charge, to the next five callers who have at least $500,000 saved for their retirement. Just call Geiger Wealth at 800-681-2498. That's 800-681-2498. Geiger Wealth Management will translate the complex financial planning process into easy-to-understand steps. It's a full-blown planning financial plan, analyzing not only where you are today, but most importantly, a roadmap to get you where you need to be. So for the next five callers with at least $500,000 saved for retirement, Geiger Wealth is offering a complimentary financial plan. Give them a call, 800-681-2498. That's 800-681-2498. Hi, everyone. Steve Bertrand here, inviting you to join me. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, 1238 in Chicago. So who do you trust and how much? The 16th annual Edelman Trust Barometer was released at the World Economic Summit in Davos, Switzerland, shows that business is among the most trusted institutions around the world. Jay Porter is the president of Edelman Chicago. He joins us on a phone line now. Jay, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks so much, Steve.
You know, it's interesting to me that business has really been making a rally in the past few years in this survey. I mean, is that a fair read?
It is a fair read, and we think that we see that as an opportunity for business not to do business as usual, but to understand that this environment really offers them a challenge to step up and lead forward in a new way.
I want to get to that, but I want to make my way in a sort of roundabout way. Government not doing so well in this survey.
Not doing so well, up slightly globally and in many of the countries that we study. But that's a pretty mild increase compared to the growth in business.
Right. I think the important thing to point out with this study is, I mean, it's broken down by country, but it is a worldwide study. So when we talk generally, we're pretty much talking about around the world. I'm interested in the inequality of trust around the world, and I guess it's perhaps most acute here in the United States. I think it's broken down between the informed and the mass population. Informed meaning probably better off, and if you're better off in this world, you're probably more likely to trust the institutions that got you there. If you're not better off, you're probably more likely not to trust those institutions. But it seems like that divide has been growing.
It has been growing, and it's a really troublesome development. You're right that a lot of that gap is driven by income, inequality and expectations about the future between that more elite informed public and the mass population. There is a double digit trust gap between high income and low income respondents in about 2/3 of the countries. And in fact, in the U.S., that's a 31 point gap. So that's a very different view on trust if you're at the top of the ladder versus at the bottom.
So if you're at the top, you're 31. Well, the gap is 31% between the two. I'm not going to try to do the numbers.
That's correct.
That'll be safe for all of us. But in a way, that explains, doesn't it? I know around the world there have been sort of nativist governments that have been popping up. It's happened in Hungary, a little bit in Poland. There was a strong movement in France. And here in the United States, I mean, we have Donald Trump, and maybe to a lesser extent Bernie Sanders, but Donald Trump very much perhaps is speaking to that gap.
I think both of the examples you just cited are exactly what we're looking at here in the United States, and it relates to the broader issue societally that we're seeing from this is the ability of elites, whether you're a political party or a mayor, the traditional elites are having a much harder time navigating and commanding the respect and influence that traditionally they've expected. And really the way we go about the business of influencing people is based on this idea, at the idea that people at the top of the pyramid can and do exercise influence over the mass population. And we really are seeing that globally break down.
As the gap grows, the masses are less likely to follow the people who are telling them to follow them.
Correct.
And so Edelman says, and it's reported in the survey, that this can thwart innovation. I'm not sure I understand that. Can you explain that for me?
Yeah, we've looked at trust and innovation over the past couple of years, and really what we found is that many people globally, and then certainly here in the U.S. as well, look at innovation, and as opposed to seeing that as only a good thing, they actually unfortunately see greed or narrow financial interest behind the innovation that's being presented to us. So things like the new cell phone you're supposed to buy every year, or the new cloud services where you might store your files, they actually don't trust those in the way that we assume to. And we argue that it's because they haven't been engaged properly around the benefits to them versus the benefits of the company that's putting that innovation forward.
Kind of increases their alienation in a way.
It does. It does, and it creates challenges for them.
Let's get back to the CEO and business then. What can business leaders do to narrow this gap?
Well, it's a great question. And one of the things we delved into this year, we've looked at business trust, but we looked even more deeply this year at things that CEOs personally can do. The overwhelming majority of people we surveyed could not name a single CEO. So the first thing is to be a real person, not just somebody wearing that label of CEO. Be out there communicating transparently about your company. We also saw this year that values really matter. Our respondents said they wanted to know that CEOs are taking action personally to improve the communities where their businesses operate and demonstrate strong values and treating employees well.
You know, one of the things I like, too, is the respondents said that they would like businesses to be more interested in the long-term picture than in short-term profits. And I think that's one of the things that really has cost this country, this focus on, you know, here I am doing a show on Wall Street in many ways, but focusing on the day-to-day stock prices rather than the long-term R&D, the investment in people and things such as that.
You know, it's something that we see in the study. It's also something that we hear from the CEOs who are our clients. Many of them decry the short-term pressure that Wall Street puts on them. And if they're at a public company, they would like to take a more long-term view of their impact on communities and other issues, but feel tremendous pressure to make sure that quarterly earnings number is acceptable.
Well, that's a lot to think of. And, you know, I think personally that I tend to look at political leaders when it comes to bridging that gap. So it's a nice little exercise to consider the fact that it might be business leaders who can help to do that, that actually the business leaders could bring us together. And you talked about naming CEOs. I can name Richard Edelman, who's a CEO of Edelman, your boss. And I can tell you he's going to be on the program here next week. I'm not sure which day it's going to be, but Richard Edelman will be in the studio. So we'll talk more about this and many other things. Jay Porter, thank you very much for joining us, the president of Edelman Chicago. I appreciate your time this afternoon.
Thanks so much, Steve. Really appreciate it.
You bet. You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. All right. Thank you very much, Steve Alexander. You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand, the host. As I said earlier, I hope you'll follow me on Facebook at Steve Bertrand or Steve Bertrand on Books or Steve Bertrand Travel. You got your choice. Also on Twitter, my handle is at Steve Bertrand. Ian Scherer joins us now from CNET. Ian, where are you on Twitter? How do we find you?
I am at Ian Schur, I-A-N-S-H-E-R-R, and I'm on pretty much every social network that way. I realized a long time ago it's best to use my name and make it the same everywhere.
You don't have any sort of cute tag that no one's going to be able to remember when they
need to find you?
Well,
I'm cute enough on my own, aren't I, Steve? That should be enough.
I don't know. I think I might replace you with the robot one day. That's the big thing, isn't it? I've been reading about that. I guess there might have been a study last week or so about the jobs that are at risk when it comes to robots, and I'm reading so much about it. I see in CNET this piece about that. And let's start with this company, Insurify, how they might take over your insurance agent down the street.
Yeah, obviously all of us probably have gone through that experience where we have tried to sign up for auto insurance and it is the worst experience. I certainly don't enjoy it. And so this company has decided to try a whole different approach. You take a photo of your license plate, you text it to the company, and this really smart software that they built that they called Evia, which is short for Expert Virtual Insurance Agent.
How's that for a handle? Yeah.
Right, exactly. They could work on the name. Sends back a couple of questions, and then it basically sorts through 82 insurance carriers to find the best one for the money. And this idea, of course, basically gets rid of Flo from Progressive or Jake from State Farm. They're out of a job. And it's basically automating all of the stuff. And, of course, this is a trend that has been going on for a long time now. I mean, you look at the concerns over how farming has changed. You look at, you know, in San Francisco here, the Golden Gate Bridge, all of the toll workers are gone. It's now completely automated.
Sure.
There's a great list that the BBC has that we have a link to on CNET.com to find out how at risk your job is to be automated. And just so you know, Steve, journalist ranks pretty low so far, so we're pretty safe for the moment. Telephone salespeople.
Ian, wait a minute. My job is at risk for so many other reasons. Being a robot is far away.
Telephone salespeople, typists, bookkeepers, and bank and post office clerks are the most at risk. So I'm sorry if you're in that job, everyone listening, but that's what it's looking at. That's what's interesting. And so it's very interesting because, of course, the travel industry had this upset many years ago with Expedia, TripAdvisor, Travelocity. Now the CEO of this Insurify believes that the car insurance market's next.
Well, you know, I mean, think of the tax preparation industry. I've been emailing with TurboTax even this morning. You know, I
yes,
do my.
In fact, in 2014, 29 million people preferred to use TurboTax to do their taxes than to hire a bean counter to do it for them. So this is definitely the trend going on. And, you know, we've seen this all over the place. NPR had a whole series called Robots Ate My Job. And there's some economists out there who say that half the jobs in our economy could disappear in the next 20 years thanks to computers.
I'm sure
that's a really fascinating problem.
I'm sure that's interesting, but I don't really know what NPR is. Okay, so also lawyers even, right? They're using algorithms to search sort of legal documents.
Yes, it's going everywhere. And it's a really fascinating thing to see what's going on. And so, you know, we'll see where it all plays out. Certainly, this could end up being nothing. But the way that this technology is being used is really fascinating. And again, I mean, automation is something that is guaranteed. I mean, even in manufacturing, we see it happening. It's happening everywhere.
All right, one more, and then I want to talk a little bit about Facebook. But there's actually... you can now use, it must not be a robot, but someone who can pick out the right type of makeup for your face.
Yes, exactly. That's another one that we had in there. And that one is really fascinating as well, right? It's called Ipsy. And in fact, there was a really neat one as well. We had a video about it on CNET.com from earlier this January of a company that will, if you go to the retailer and you put you go in front of an iPad that uses a camera, it actually shows you what the makeup looks like on your face before you put it on.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, all of this stuff, right? Lancome counter, right? It's really fascinating problems that are popping up.
Well, I know Flo is very talented, so I'm not worried for her. She'll find another job.
Hopefully.
Maybe she'll work at Facebook, right? Everyone's talking about Apple this week and that, you know, the sales, the rate of increases have begun to drop for Apple. Maybe everyone who's going to ever have an iPhone has an iPhone. So people are worried there, but not far away is Facebook, and Facebook's coming up roses lately.
Yeah, they're really doing well. It's fascinating because, I mean, if you look at Apple's quarterly earnings report, every company, you know, four times a year, they talk about how their sales did and how their profits did. And so Apple on Tuesday told their investors that iPhone sales have stalled. And this is not surprising. The entire really smartphone world has started to really suffer in terms of growth. We seem to have hit the maximum number of people that we can sell around the world, these phones. And it's not a small number. It's billions of people. But, you know, it's kind of one of those things of once you reached everyone on the planet, how many more can you sell?
Sure.
And so the iPhone isn't doing as well in terms of growth as they had in the past. But Facebook has figured out so many different ways to show us ads in a way that apparently we like, because when you click on it, they get paid.
Uh-huh.
That they are just going gangbusters. And 90% of the nearly 1.6 billion people who are using Facebook every month are using it through a mobile device. And advertisers have gone from being, hey, let's play with this idea of mobile advertising, to full hog going after it. And so that's why Facebook's data is showing so well. Their stock is up double digits today. It's been a really strong indication that this company that, again, it started as a way for us to share photos of cats and babies, has become a fabric of our lives and one of the most successful companies in Silicon Valley now.
Think of the hoodies Mark Zuckerberg can buy. Ian Scher from CNET. Look, thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Bill and Wendy just around the corner. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.